This is a Manhattan-bound 6 local train.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Strangers on a 6 Train by IQ, a Stargate Atlantis fan fiction. Read by Kisa Hocklin. Rodney squared his shoulders and marched determinedly toward the train, hoping to convey a sense of quiet dignity and extreme importance to the mob of passengers, so that they would be struck with awe and humility and beg him to take their seats, rather than be forced to stand, like a plebeian. This tactic, while never really effective, ended up being particularly futile today. His dignified march was too slow for the closing doors, resulting in a far less dignified sprint and sideways leap maneuver that probably dislocated his right shoulder and crushed the foot of an old woman. Of course, she overreacted, and he did not weigh at least 300 pounds, though the remark caused him to suck in his stomach a little to emphasize the wrongness of her statement. Squeezed in between the irritable grandmother and a shifty-looking 15-year-old in ill-fitting pants, Rodney once again questioned the wisdom of living on the Upper East Side and working downtown. His research grants and side projects for the government, along with the inflated salary NYU had offered him to keep him away from all the other American universities that had wanted him, and, as Rodney was fond of pointing out, there had been dozens, allowed him to live in a style normally foreign to college professors. Early on, he had chosen to flaunt this fact by securing a townhouse on Madison Avenue. Sure, he'd had to live on fast food and ramen noodles for a while, and he couldn't afford cable for 6 months. But it was worth it to see the look on women's faces when they pulled up to his door. Mysteriously, however, the few women from work who had agreed to go out with him never seemed to stay around for more than a dinner or two, despite his awesome accommodations and his expertly wielded espresso machine. At any rate, the uptown digs were necessary, for his comfort as well as his ego, and even if he didn't despise taxis strictly on principle, if you're going to extort someone in exchange for transportation, you might as well provide a therapeutic vibrating massage seat and a drink menu. He was way, way too smart to be forced to converse with someone whose career prospects had been so limited that they needed to find work driving in circles and terrorizing jaywalkers. That left the MTA during rush hour, and because of his hedonistic love of sleeping in, Rodney never managed to get up early enough to take the bus, which was slightly less sardine-like, but infuriatingly slow. Most things, in fact, seemed infuriatingly slow to Rodney, particularly other people and the speed at which they thought, spoke, or did what Rodney wanted them to do. Now, for instance, he was glaring murderously at the kid with the pants, who was shoving closer to Rodney to make room for the fresh crowd of passengers when he could have just as easily moved closer to the wall. The kid returned the glare with such enthusiasm that Rodney actually feared for his life momentarily. Then the kid moved his hand over a knife-shaped lump in the side pocket of the huge pants, and Rodney thought it best to avert his eyes, pretending to have been trying to read the sign above the kid's head. He hoped, for the sake of his pride, that the kid actually was carrying a switchblade in those pants, instead of, infinitely more probable, a comb. The crowd pressed in from all sides, more dense even than the usual Monday morning density. Rodney embarrassingly began to breathe faster, clutching the bar he was holding onto until his fingers ached and his knuckles turned white. He couldn't move his other arm anymore. His ear itched, and he frantically pulled on the arm to free it, but it was firmly imprisoned. Rodney felt his mild claustrophobia ratchet up quickly into full-blown panic as he realized he couldn't move, couldn't breathe, and where was his briefcase? Was it stuck between the legs of the kid with the maybe knife, probably comb, and the girl with her iPod on way too loud? Rodney could very clearly make out the bass line to "We Built This City on Rock and Roll." How could he, trapped as he was, prevent someone from rooting through his stuff, or stealing the case altogether? His tests from last term were in there. It had taken him weeks to grade those. They had 3 essays each, and now someone was going to take them and sell them to his students so they could alter their grades, and why didn't he keep records of that sort of thing, and why wouldn't his ear stop itching? It was so hot, 20 degrees too hot at least. Why was it so hot? He felt breath on the back of his neck and wanted to scream, to fight his way out and jump onto the track where it was dirty and rat-infested and he would probably die, but it would be cooler and no one would be breathing on him so slowly. And how could someone on a train this fucking crowded be breathing so slow, so hot, and infuriatingly slow on his neck when Rodney couldn't breathe at all? He wrenched his hand off the pole and scratched furiously at his ear. The train stopped suddenly. Unsupported, Rodney hurtled sideways, bounced off the pole, hard, and tripped backwards, sweating, right into Slow Breather's personal space. Slow Breather caught him easily by the elbows. "Not a fan of small spaces, are you, buddy?" said Slow Breather, rather inanely. In addition to breathing slowly and having bony knees, he had crooked one in between Rodney's legs to keep him from falling to the ground, an action Rodney recognized as completely unnecessary, since the sheer volume of passengers would prevent him from falling anywhere but into other people. The guy talked funny, like some kind of pothead California cowboy. Infuriatingly slow, of course, with an amused tinge of warmth, and a soft drawl that Rodney refused to find really, really sexy, because this was already the worst day of his life, and he was not going to add sexual identity crisis to the list of things that were stressing him out right now. Slow Talker slid one warm, careful hand from Rodney's elbow over to his lower back, gently pushing him upright again. He did not move away once Rodney was safely upright and holding onto the pole once again. Rodney wondered through his panic-induced haze whether he was supposed to say something now. Perhaps pothead California cowboys who routinely rescue delicate science professors like to hear a thank you once in a while. Or maybe an apology for falling on top of them. Rodney started to turn himself around so he could mumble something to the guy. Maybe find out what a pothead California cowboy might look like. Rodney half expected him to be shirtless and wearing a 10-gallon hat. Something about that voice suggested juvenile impracticality and inflated self-assuredness. "No," said Slow Talker in Rodney's left ear, the one that had itched earlier. "Don't do that. If you move, you'll just feel more confined." He said it gently, easily, like it was a suggestion. Only his hand on Rodney's back pressed him firmly back into position and held him there, facing forward. He moved his other hand from Rodney's elbow to his shoulder, squeezing it in a way that was probably supposed to be comforting, but was really just sort of confusing. Another crowd boarded the train. Rodney was pushed against the man, feeling warmth and bony hips and a hard chest pressing into him. The hands moved again, one to his waist, his waist, and the other around the front of his shoulder, an arm snug alongside Rodney's, maybe even closer than absolutely necessary, his body not just propped up now, but held firmly against the guy's chest. In those close quarters, Rodney thought fearfully, he was probably just imagining the change in Cowboy's grip. Said Rodney, wincing when his voice came out higher than usual. He tried again. What? You're having a meltdown, explained Cowboy soothingly. You're hyperventilating, and your neck is turning all red. Rodney didn't know how to feel about this man noticing the color of his neck. So what? Happens all the time. I'll be fine. The crowd pressed in. Rodney's vision grayed. His knees buckled slightly. Okay. Cowboy cricked his knee again and tightened his hold. You're okay. I am not. Shut up a minute. Rodney was so taken aback that he obeyed the order, snapping his jaw shut mid-sentence. Okay, he repeated. Now, relax your body. You're only taking up more space by tensing up like that. Rodney rolled his eyes and tried his best to loosen his muscles, rolling them again when he realized that, yes, a few inches of space seemed to clear around him. Good, said the voice in his ear. Now a deep breath. Rodney wanted to punch him, but he tried that too, taking a long, gasping breath and choking on the gulp of air. Through his coughing, he heard a low chuckling from behind him. God, you can't even breathe right. How did you get to be a professor? Rodney wondered through his irritation and borderline hypoxia how Cowboy knew he was a professor. From down here, slowly, urged the man, distracting Rodney thoroughly from the thought by reaching around and lightly patting his abdomen, an invasion so severe that had Rodney not been slowly suffocating, he would have thrown his weight into the skinny, presumptuous bastard and crushed him to death against the wall. Instead, he drew in a breath as instructed, slowly, and then another, until it got easier. He sagged a bit, his grip on the bar no longer white-knuckle tight. He could feel the rise and fall of Cowboy's chest. Unconsciously, he started to mirror the rhythm of the other man's breaths. Close your eyes. Are you out of your... Just do it! Realizing that he couldn't really do anything about it even if someone did make a play for his briefcase, Rodney did as he was told, figuring that if he was going to be robbed or knifed or whatever, it would be better not to see it coming. Now I want you to picture a cloud, a dark cloud, made up of all the things that make you anxious. Is this supposed to be helping me right now? There's no talking. Rodney heaved a huge, irritated sigh, letting himself fall more heavily on the man. He swore he could actually hear him smirking. Now, the clouds are lifting, blowing gently away, leaving only clear blue skies. Clear blue skies, Rodney echoed. The warm breath in his ear was making it tingle. He yawned, feeling hazily content in a way that really made no kind of sense. The voice was murmuring something. Mm-hmm, Rodney said. I said, this is my stop, repeated Cowboy, who was now smirking so much that Rodney could feel it. So long, buddy. Hey, what? Rodney started, but the support on his back was gone, and he stumbled back into the wall. By the time he'd turned himself around, He barely caught sight of a head of absolutely ridiculous dark hair before it exited off into the 42nd Street station. Rodney actually wondered briefly when they had moved 42nd Street above 66th before he realized he'd missed his stop 5 stations ago. Rodney was 20 minutes late for his class, for the first time since he was hired. All of his students had already left, except for Aiden Ford, who sat in the first row with his feet up, reading a Sports Illustrated. Ford was an annoyingly friendly kid, not unlike a puppy in many respects, who was much better at football than he would ever be at mechanical engineering, but who insisted on displaying a rather baffling enthusiasm for Rodney's class. Rodney thought maybe it was the textbook's occasional mention of robots. "Hi, Dr. McKay," Ford said brightly. "You look really relaxed today." "Don't be stupid," snapped Rodney, without his usual ferocity. Ford noticed, his smile widening. Rodney decided to go easy on the kid. He was the only one who had stayed, after all, and Rodney was finding it harder than usual to be hostile when unprovoked. "Say, Ford?" "Yeah, Dr. McKay?" "You remember that bit from Chapter 3 about United Robotics with weaponry?" Ford lit up. "I sure do, Professor." "Well." Rodney moved away from the podium and swung out a desk from beside Ford, setting it down across from him and sitting down. "Did I ever tell you about the robot I built in 9th grade? It had opposable thumbs and lasers. Lasers that shot out of its eyes." Ford's face slackened in wonder. "No way." Rodney nodded. "Way. It completely destroyed the cafeteria. And pants the principal." Ford's eyes shone. "Sir, I keep trying to tell everyone you're way cooler than they say you are." He lowered his eyes sadly. "No one ever believes me." "Yes, well," Rodney colored slightly. "No one ever believes me, either." Ford patted his arm sympathetically. Rodney scowled. Rodney's good mood ran out quickly. A week passed without him running into Cowboy again, and another 3 days went by before Rodney realized he was anxiously waiting to run into Cowboy again. He went to a play after work to take his mind off things, some inane musical that cost way too much and failed to keep him awake for more than an hour, and afterwards sequestered himself in a coffee shop near the theater to wait out the subway crowds, because no good could come of crowded trains, he was sure of that now. He boarded a near-empty 6 train, sat down, heard a familiar voice drawl, "Hey there, Professor," looked up, and immediately became irate, because, damn it, even a completely, totally straight guy could see the white-hot hotness of this man. "You!" said Rodney accusingly. Hot cowboy, and there was no 10-gallon hat in evidence, just the stupid, stupid hair. Raised one eyebrow in one corner of his irrationally nice-looking mouth. He stood up from his seat and ambled over, stopping in front of Rodney and leaning his hip in an exaggeratedly jaunty fashion against a pole. He didn't even sway as the train bumped along. He seemed to have a sort of jungle cat grace that had Rodney confusedly wondering what it would take to throw the man's balance. What if Rodney jumped him, pushed him to the floor, and... "John Shepherd," said Hot Cowboy, and Rodney had never been so grateful to be interrupted mid-thought. "Rodney McKay, Dr. Rodney McKay, or Professor McKay, but you already knew that." Rodney narrowed his eyes. "How did you know that?" He gasped aloud as a truly terrifying thought occurred to him. "Oh, God, you aren't one of my students, are you?" Because then Rodney would not only be suddenly kind of gay, but also a criminal. Cowboy, Shepherd, laughed. A truly terrible, embarrassing, braying laugh that made Rodney smile before he remembered himself and covered it by scowling. Shepherd's odd, cat-like hazel eyes were sparkling at Rodney wickedly. "I'm flattered, McKay, but I actually graduated college some time ago." Shepherd, who did look young, but not actually that young, now that Rodney looked closely, reached up and scratched one weirdly pointed, elf-like ear. Rodney's own ear tingled, and he blushed. "I have older students," he muttered defensively. Shepherd just grinned, a totally dorky grin full of even white teeth, and sat down next to Rodney without being asked. Right next to him, even though they had the whole car to spread out in, and their sides were pressing together. "I've been riding your train for a while," Shepherd drawled, and why did the way he said that sound really, really dirty? "You usually get off at the stop for NYU. Plus you carry that briefcase, and you wear those stodgy suits and those boring ties." "Hey," Rodney objected feelingly. "And I've seen you grumbling over papers more than once when it's less crowded, and you've got this air about you, like you're smarter and therefore better than everyone." "Hey!" Rodney narrowed his eyes. "I didn't say it was a bad thing," Shepherd said, smirking. "So what do you teach?" "Mechanical engineering," Physics, theoretical astrophysics, Rodney listed proudly, waiting for the look of impressed astonishment. What he got was less satisfying. Cool, said Shepard, nodding. My first master's was in physics.
Your first?
Yeah, well, I get off here. It was really good to see you, Rodney. He drawled out the name, Rodney, and smiled like he meant it, a combination that had Rodney struggling to keep a blush from surfacing. By the time he'd collected himself enough to ask something, anything, what Shepard did with his multiple masters, where he lived, whether he was ever coming back to the 6 train or was just going to abandon Rodney to his panic and confusion, Shepard had gone. Rodney really wished he would stop doing that. After that, Rodney saw Shepard every day. He ended up running into him on the platform every morning around 7. Sometimes Shepard was late, and Rodney accidentally missed a few trains until he got there, looking bright-eyed and alert despite the effect he exuded of having just rolled out of bed, thrown a worn soft t-shirt over a pair of 2 loose cargo pants, and Rodney knew those shirts were soft. He'd been pressed up against Shepard in the rush hour crowds enough to have noticed, and run a hand through his pillow-mussed hair. The man probably didn't own a mirror or bother checking one in the morning, because the hair was consistently a disturbingly attractive disaster. He probably jogged to the station, Rodney thought in disgust, and he was probably the only person in existence who could jog and saunter at the same time. Rodney never did find out exactly what John did for a living. The man, despite being so outgoing to absolutely everyone that he almost gave the impression of being in heat, was surprisingly reticent when it came to talking about himself. Rodney, however, could talk about himself at length, and did. In an unlikely twist of fate, Shepard turned out to like hearing Rodney talk. He listened, rolled his eyes, laughed his terrible laugh, and baited Rodney with teasing jibes that had him flying into a tirade one moment and laughing along with John the next. They always stood together or sat together, really together, with their sides touching, no matter how much room was on the train, and Rodney found himself forgetting to lament his loss of personal boundaries. It wasn't long, however, before Rodney's legendary self-centeredness gave way to burning curiosity about his strange new partner in commute. He tried on several occasions to get John to talk about his job, but all he got was, "I teach."
"You teach? Physics?" Rodney prodded.
John smirked. "Something like that," he said. Rodney waited. "Where do you teach physics?" he continued with exaggerated patience. "Downtown," John replied evasively, and that was the end of it. Further prodding on the following morning revealed that John liked college football, Ferris wheels, and things that go over 200 miles per hour, further confirming Rodney's belief that the man had a mental age of about 12. "I bet you build model race cars or something," Rodney accused one day. "Model planes, actually," John said brightly. "My other degree is in aerodynamics, so some of them actually fly, but most of them just have cool designs painted on them."
"Of course they do," Rodney sighed, dropping his head into his hands.
"Hey, now that I think about it, I've got a model DeLorean that I made in college. It has those sweet wing doors. I rigged them up to open and close by remote control."
"Oh my God," groaned Rodney, utterly dismayed. "You're probably smarter than half the NYU faculty, and you're using your intelligence to make toys."
"I also made a tiny flux capacitor for the interior." Rodney lifted his head and glared. "All right, that's it. You're doing this on purpose, aren't you?" John grinned at him and winked.
One morning, Rodney was irascible. He had missed his morning espresso, a calamity unequaled in his world. He realized things were really bad when, to his dismay, he found himself replying to John's good-natured, "Nice tie, Principal McKay," with a bitter, "Why don't you go fuck yourself?" Miraculously, John, instead of leaving him in a huff to go sit with the hot redhead, who had been very unsubtly eyeing him from across the aisle, peered at him worriedly.
"You okay today, buddy?" he asked earnestly. Rodney felt like he'd kicked a puppy.
"I missed my coffee today," Rodney explained lamely, wishing for once that he could trade some of his brilliance for even a basic understanding of interpersonal relationships. John nodded understandingly. The next morning, he showed up at their platform with a styrofoam cup and handed it to Rodney with a silent, eager smile. Rodney knew his own cappuccinos were 100 times better than these commercial coffee shop ones, but right then he thought it was probably the best cappuccino he'd ever had, and he told John so. John's resulting grin was blinding. "431. Please. Prime. 937. Also prime. 1003. John was swinging his long, loose body restlessly between the support bars on the half-empty uptown train car. They met on their way home sometimes, more and more frequently as they discovered how to time it right, although they never planned it out. Rodney was standing in front of his own seat, flexing his fingers on the handrail and shifting from side to side, because watching John be all antsy always made him kind of antsy, too. Not prime. 27,644,437, Rodney suggested jokingly. Bell prime. 1489. Rodney's eyes widened. Are you kidding me? Just how smart are you? John just smiled and looked at him innocently. Oh, fine. Triangular prime. Show off. John grinned. Could have been Mensa. Rodney fell back into his seat. I'm checking that last answer when I get to work, he threatened. Son of a bitch, Rodney said to his laptop later that day, not sure whether to laugh or cry. Okay, no, Rodney sighed, shaking his head in disbelief. You are not going to stand there and tell me that Star Wars is better than Star Trek. 100%, insisted John. It's not even a contest. How did I get roped into this conversation, mourned Rodney. I used to be brilliant. I used to make fun of people like this. People who would actually try to compare a trilogy of movies with a television series and decide which one rocks more as if it actually matters. Han Solo rocks more than Captain Kirk, said John. Han Solo wasn't even the main character, Rodney exploded. Luke was, and he was a total wuss, and he had some creepy hard-on for his sister. Sure, at first, but he overcame all that. It's all about dynamic character development. Rodney glared. Some secret shameful part of you is an English major, isn't it? John smiled slyly. Rodney refrained from hitting him. Also, what's wrong with Kirk's character development? He's lonely, introspective, loyal, rebelliously noble. He's not lonely, he's a slut, argued John. He hits on everything that breathes. Oh, look who's talking, Rodney snapped. And anyway, he's not that bad. Not that bad? Have you ever seen the show? He's probably sleeping with his entire crew. Women, men, Vulcans, Tribbles. Ew, said Rodney. Uhura, Sulu, Dr. McCoy. Oh, please. Please, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a piece of ass, John mimicked. Oh, my God, said Rodney. If you make a bones boner pun, I am jumping off this train. I am flattered, Captain, but the removal of our pants at this juncture would be illogical. You're not funny, Rodney huffed, his lips twitching involuntarily as John laughed so hard his eyes watered. They were beginning to get strange looks, which was quite an accomplishment on the New York City subway. John seemed oblivious to this. Ooh, oh, beam me up, Scotty, he moaned breathlessly, doubling over in hysterics and clutching Rodney's arm for support. Helplessly, Rodney started laughing too, rubbing his temples with his fingers. God, I hate you so much, he wheezed, and John grinned, gasping for breath as he leaned against him. I hear you are behaving strangely, Dr. Radek Zelenka informed Rodney one afternoon, sipping his tea with that calm yet energetically smug air about him that meant he'd heard gossip. Usually the embarrassing kind. Usually about Rodney. Rodney had become accustomed to going to a nearby cafe with the strange little Czech professor whenever they ran into each other on campus. He would call Radek his friend, if it weren't for moments like this, when he was sure the bastard only spent time with him because he took pleasure in the discomfort of others. I'm behaving the exact same way I always do, Rodney snapped, like a brilliant man who doesn't have time to waste on pointless observations clearly intended to unsettle me. And who did you hear that from? Rodney knew Zelenka's game, but that didn't mean he wasn't going to play. One didn't survive on a college campus by rising above the pettiness. It was best just to sink to its level. Everyone is saying things, was Radek's alarming answer. Students, other professors, the custodial staff, the lady at the coffee counter. Gladys? Rodney gasped, glaring around at the nice matronly woman who sold him his coffee every day, feeling betrayed. Gladys waved cheerfully. They are saying you are distracted, less sharp, less terrifying. Well, that was troubling. I am not. I am feared. My students fear me. Their fear of me is dwarfed only by their awe. Zelenka shook his head. They are beginning to like you. That hyper young man, Aiden, he is spreading stories. And they are all getting better grades on their lab reports. Maybe I'm just a brilliant teacher. Is another thing. Your work is actually getting sloppier. Not by much, but of course I notice. Ha! Dream on. It is true. Your last article on wormhole theory had many gaps in logic. Rodney sniffed and didn't answer him, And here was another reason why he hesitated to call Radek his friend. He was almost as smart as Rodney, and that was scary, unfamiliar territory. So what are they saying? That I'm getting stupid, going insane? That I'm in a destructive downward spiral of generous grading and logical gaps that will result in me being committed and you inheriting my place as the intellectual leader of NYU? What? Radek shook his head. Actually, what most of them are saying is that you seem happy. He tilted his head. And I would agree with them. That's ridiculous. I've always been a happy person. I was perfectly happy before. Before what? Radek asked shrewdly, and Rodney groaned because that's not even what he meant. And anyway, Radek couldn't know about John because no one's spy network was that good. Leave me alone, said Rodney dangerously. My good mood is bound to wear off sometime, and it might as well be on your watch. Radek just smiled. It is good to see you happy, my friend, he said, and Rodney rolled his eyes, half smiling because he couldn't really help it. Even as time passed, a month, and then two, and then four, Rodney continued to have mysterious, inconvenient reactions whenever he was around Shepard. Tingly, warm, fluttery reactions that Rodney might have identified as a crush had John been a little less male. As it was, Rodney chalked it all up to a rather strong affection. Because he liked John, he could admit at least that by now, and there weren't a lot of people that Rodney liked, combined with the fact that he hadn't gotten laid in a long, long time. He dealt with the feelings the same way he dealt with Professor Kavanaugh, or students looking for office hours. He ignored them and waited for them to go away. The denial tactic was easier some days than others. The days when John talked about math presented a challenge. It was also pretty difficult one morning on a packed train, when Ronnie turned toward John to mutter a joke about a woman's I Heart L. Ron Hubbard t-shirt and wound up tripping over someone's foot and pitching forward. Wow, graceful, teased John as he caught Rodney around the waist. Rodney glared up at him and almost lost his balance again. Because John's face was so close, and he was wearing that lazy, fond smile, and he really had no right to smell so good while they were crowded in with 100 sweaty commuters. The tingly, warm flutters returned with a vengeance, and he realized with mortification that he might actually be getting kind of hard. Because of John. Because of John holding him. And yeah, Rodney was a genius, but some things were beyond even his impressive rationalization skills. "How did you survive before you met me?" John asked him, eyes bright, as he set Rodney on his feet again. And Rodney's first thought was, I don't know. His second thought was something along the lines of, oh, fuck! And he decided to do something about this weirdness before he lost his grip on reality. You're breathing kind of fast, John observed, his eyebrows scrunching in concern. Are you panicking again? Yes, said Rodney, nodding. Definitely panicking. A perfect solution came the next Tuesday afternoon when, while walking Samantha Carter to her door after work, Rodney noticed an encouraging lack of irritation coming from the lovely blonde woman. At great risk to his pride and dignity, he asked her to meet him on the subway platform the next morning so she could ride the rest of the way to work with him. She had to repeat herself three times before he realized that, yes, she had actually accepted him. Rodney was shocked, thrilled, elated. He had been waiting for this moment for so long, and he couldn't let anything ruin it. He forcibly repressed the inexplicable lump of guilt that had taken up residence in his chest. Wednesday morning, Rodney struggled for an embarrassing amount of time over what to wear. He finally decided on a bright blue dress shirt, which the salesgirl, clearly gunning for the commission, had insisted brought out the color of his eyes. He'd bought a new pair of flat-front khaki slacks for the occasion. First dates often caused him to panic and buy expensive clothing, which he was just then realizing might be a bit too tight around his hips and ass. He was rotating from angle to angle in front of the mirror, ruffling his nondescript hair in a futile attempt to get it to go all sexy rumpled like John's, when he caught sight of the clock and realized he was going to be late. In a frenzy, he heaved a desperate sigh and jogged out the door, realizing a block later that he had forgotten a tie and jacket. He arrived at his station with seconds to spare. He had to time this right, catch a train that would take him to Sam's station no later than 7:15, since he wasn't about to give her time to change her mind and get on the train without him. John wasn't there yet, and Rodney found himself panicking a little. He'd grown used to having some form of emotional support during these moments of high anxiety. He felt overheated, faint, like he was maybe going to throw up. He ran a finger along the inside of his collar and rolled up his sleeves to the elbows, trying to cool himself down. When John arrived a moment later, he actually stopped short as he was coming over. He handed Rodney the usual coffee without his usual easy grin and sunny greeting. His face seemed frozen, fixed in a sort of glazed, speculative expression as his eyes moved almost imperceptibly up and down. He whistled. "Nice," he said with a slow, warm smile. Rodney flushed. "You cannot make fun of me. I am nervous enough as it is." John's smile widened, and his eyes flashed something, relief, that Rodney couldn't really place. "Rodney," he said urgently, his eyes clear and bright and joyful. "Rodney, listen, you have to know you have nothing to be nervous about, really." "What are you talking about? I've been trying to get Sam to go out with me for months. This is a huge deal. I am allowed to panic a little. I should have worn a jacket, or at least a tie. Why didn't I wear a tie?" Rodney smoothed his collar frantically. John frowned. "Sam?" he asked, low and slow and dangerous. Rodney, confused by his change in tone, abruptly stopped fiddling with his collar, narrowed his eyes at John quizzically, shrugged, and continued running his hands nervously over his outfit. "Yes, Sam. A professor in my department. Dr. Samantha Carter, hot blonde, who can apparently no longer fight the undeniable attraction between us," Rodney smirked, straightening the cuffs on his arms. "Samantha?" John said in a small, high voice. Rodney looked at him again, wondering whether John had lost all those cool IQ points that made being friends with him so much fun. The sudden shift from intensely happy to kind of angry to crushed and melted had Rodney genuinely concerned. If the normally good-natured and temperate John was having mood swings, he might be in the grips of some kind of rare tropical hormonal disease. And if John had a rare disease, he definitely didn't have the self-preservation instincts to go to a doctor. He couldn't take care of himself. He couldn't even comb his hair or iron his shirts. He'd probably die before he even realized he was ill, and then Rodney would have no friends. He might have a really hot girlfriend, but strangely enough, in the face of John's death, the prospect was a little comfort. "Are you okay?" Rodney asked, dropping his hands from his shirt and placing them on John's face, feeling his cheeks, his forehead. "You look sort of green." "If you were dying, you'd tell me, right? I mean, I know we haven't known each other long, but I'd like some advance notice if you're going to die, because you're pretty much the only person who hangs out with me willingly, and if you died, it would just really stress me out." John smiled, weak but genuine, and put a hand over Rodney's where it rested on the back of his neck. "I'm fine, Rodney, really." He half-grinned and looked at Rodney with his exasperated eyes, and that, at least, was familiar, so Rodney's worry abated. Then there was an awkward pause in which Rodney couldn't figure out which one of them was supposed to break contact first. John seemed to come awake a little after a few seconds and solve the dilemma, removing his hand from Rodney's and stepping back out of his reach. He looked at the floor. Rodney coughed. "So," John said, looking up at Rodney from under his eyelashes, "you're meeting her today." "Yes, yes, on the 86th Street platform." "You're going to ride with her?" John smiled tightly. "Cool." "Do I look okay?" Rodney asked anxiously. "I need a second opinion. And you're all good-looking and charming, so you probably know better than I do what impresses girls." John snorted. "No, seriously, these pants. Are these pants too small? Do they make my ass look enormous?" Rodney turned backward and put his hands on his hips, displaying the area in question. John swallowed. "Rodney, you'll be fine. You look fine. Good, really." He pushed Rodney gently by the shoulder to turn him back around and frowned for a moment, contemplating his shirt. "Okay, wait here," he said, and reached for Rodney's collar, totally destroying his meticulous job of smoothing it to perfection by unbuttoning the top few buttons and tugging it open, exposing Rodney's throat and the edge of his collarbone. "There, don't fix it," he scolded, grabbing Rodney's wrists as he reached up to readjust John's handiwork. "Come on. I must look like some kind of aging overweight Vinnie Barbarino," Rodney protested, trying to break John's grip. John laughed, and Rodney relaxed, because if Rodney could still make John laugh, then John was probably back to normal. "You do not. You look perfect." He cleared his throat. "You know, perfectly fine. Presentable." The train rolled into the station. "Go get him, champ," John said brightly, clapping Rodney on the back and giving him a shove toward the tracks. "John, hey, aren't you coming?" John was backing up, being swallowed by the crowd, making room for the mob surging forward to board the train. "No, I've got an appointment today, actually, in this part of town," John explained with a half-smile. "I'll, you know, see you," he said, giving Rodney a dorky, pathetic little salute before turning and sort of trotting out of the terminal. Rodney stood with his brow furrowed and his eyes darting from side to side, not sure whether to feel confused, anxious, guilty, frustrated, excited, or abandoned. He decided on a mix of all of them. He caught himself reaching up to fix his collar and stopped just in time. "What the hell?" he asked himself faintly. "And then I asked her to have lunch with me, and she said, you'll never guess what she said," Rodney gushed the next morning, bouncing on his heels.
John sighed. Was it yes? He guessed flatly.
Well, yes, Rodney admitted.
That is what she said. She said yes, he reiterated, to an actual date. With me.
Wow, said John.
I know. And then at lunch we both got the blue jello.
The only real sign of a strong emotional connection, John said sardonically.
And then she told me that ever since we started working together, she'd always admired my work on multidimensional theory. Can you believe that?
When John was unresponsive, Rodney nudged him with his shoulder. Well, can you?
Isn't that kind of the equivalent of telling someone they have a great personality? He sneered, giving Rodney a look that reminded him of the classmates who used to deliberately pick him last for kickball. If Rodney were the sensitive type, and he wasn't, his feelings would be pretty hurt by that.
Sorry for boring you, he huffed, lifting his chin sharply. I hope you can forgive me for being happy for once.
John flinched. I'll forgive you when you shut the hell up, he offered, the set of his jaw stiff and painful looking. Rodney wanted to shake him.
Well, excuse me, Kirk, but not all of us were born with that face and that hair and that...
Rodney made a flailing gesture indicating Shepard's body. Whole leaning thing that gets a person laid constantly, all right? Some of us can count on one fucking hand the number of women who've smiled at us or asked us for second dates or slept with us.
You slept with her?
John asked slowly, his eyes narrowing.
Oh, what? Is that so hard to believe?
John crossed his arms.
Well, okay, fine. No, not yet, that is. But I guarantee that it's only a matter of time, he concluded with a smug half-grin.
Fantastic. I really hope you enjoy all that great professor sex, John hissed, pushing past Rodney as the train came to a stop.
Thank you, I will!
Rodney yelled at his back, even as he disappeared into the station.
Then, this isn't even your stop, Shepard!
Two weeks later, Rodney's reputation as the horrifying troll beast of NYU was firmly back in place, but he was too busy being miserable to enjoy his return to infamy. Sam, as it turned out, was dating Chuck, the new lit professor. Had been for months, and it seemed like everyone had known except Rodney. She still wanted to meet him for lunch dates, pick his brain, as she said, but Rodney's brain was so not in the mood to be picked. He'd waited a week for John to start showing up in the morning again. When that didn't happen, Rodney started taking the bus, the subway made him sad, and skipping his coffee, because coffee made him sad too. For days, he was late to work, tired, and ready to snap. "An A," he announced to his physics class one exhausted and caffeineless afternoon. "To whichever one of you idiots can explain to me why Murphy's Law has chosen to make me its bitch. Anyone? Half of you are failing. This is a golden opportunity." "You," he barked, picking a twitchy Asian girl at random from the room full of uncomfortable-looking students. "Misha, speak."
"It's Miko, actually, Dr. McKay, sir," she corrected timidly.
Rodney growled.
"But you are welcome to call me Misha if it pleases you," she squeaked, cowering in her chair.
Rodney sighed heavily and picked out another victim, a boyish all-American catalog-type guy in the back row. "You. What's your name? Football."
"Evan, sir. Lorne," said the kid.
"And are you kidding me?"
"Do I look like I'm kidding?" Rodney asked dangerously. And football, Lorne, raised an eyebrow.
"Okay, Doc. Maybe the universe is pissed off about the 30-page final you're making us write next week," he suggested with a shrug. "F. F's for everyone," declared Rodney tiredly, leaning forward against the podium and putting his head down. Not long after that, the chair of the department suggested that Rodney take a couple of days off.
"Really, you are lucky they did not fire you," Zelenka pointed out later, handing Rodney a biscotti and sitting down across from him. "You fell asleep in half your classes and went through 4 TAs in as many days."
Rodney humped petulantly, biting into his cookie. "You should be counting your blessings. Health, lingering intelligence, pretty girl who wants to be just friends with you, but also no longer threatens you with mace. Life is good." Rodney glared at him.
"You suck at this," he said morosely. "I can't believe you're my only friend now."
Radek shrugged unapologetically. "I will let you beat me at chess later, if that will help." Rodney heaved a big, sad sigh.
"Okay, but you have to at least act like you're trying to win."
"I will do my best," Zelenka promised, patting Rodney's shoulder.
"Hello?"
Rodney squeezed his eyes shut at the voice and almost hung up the phone. But desperation won out, and he stayed on the line. He clenched his fists and took a deep breath.
"Oh, for God's sake, Rodney! Hey, Rodney, is that you?"
Rodney opened his mouth and shut it again, realizing he didn't really know where to start.
"Rodney! Rodney! Meredith!"
Rodney sighed.
"Hi, Jeannie." "Hi? Hi? Are you kidding me? You haven't called or visited in...
6 months, Rodney offered helpfully, dropping onto the couch and leaning his head wearily on his hand. He was already beginning to regret this. Some sentimental, forgetful part of his brain had suggested that his sister was a kind, supportive, comforting person that he could always turn to. Never mind that much of the time, he tended to forget she existed.
"Exactly, at least 6 months. Geez, Mayor, Madison actually asks about you. She's old enough to realize you're blowing her off."
"I'm sorry," Rodney said tiredly. "I'll buy her a pony or something. Girls like ponies, right?" Jeannie snorted. "Yeah, that's fantastic. You might as well stick to the expensive electronics. It's the only reason she likes you anyway."
"Wait, did you just apologize to me?"
"No," said Rodney. "So how are things with you?"
"Okay, that's it. Something's wrong with you. Do I need to come over there?"
"Mayor, I'm coming over there."
"Okay, since when does that women's intuition thing work over the phone? And don't come over. I'm fine. I'm on vacation." "You're taking time off? What the hell happened? Are you dying?"
Jeannie actually sounded worried now, which was kind of comforting.
"No, I'm not dying. I'm just tired. I freaked out a couple of students. It's no big deal."
There was a pause.
"Then why are you calling me?"
"Can't I just check in on my baby sister?"
Jeannie said nothing.
"Fine. I need someone to talk to, all right? Someone with female sensitivity and feelings and whatnot."
Rodney squirmed and turned red. This was the most awkward heart-to-heart conversation ever attempted.
"Okay, girl trouble? Other than the usual, of course."
"Oh, ha ha," he wished.
"Partly. Not really. Kind of.
"You know, I've always envied your eloquence," Jeannie deadpanned.
"I'm sad, okay?" Rodney admitted quickly. "I'm stressed out and tired and sad, and I'm not really sure why. And I guess I'm always stressed out, but not like this. And usually I have massive amounts of coffee, but now I can't drink coffee because it reminds me of John. And Sam Carter is dating some English professor instead of me, and there was this guy who used to ride the train with me every day, but now he doesn't, and he didn't tell me why, and...
"Breathe, Mayor," Jeannie said gently.
"Calm down a little. You're still panting after Samantha Carter?"
"No, not really," Rodney said, and he was surprised to find it was true.
"And who's John?"
Rodney smacked himself in the forehead, recalling that Jeannie was a scarily good listener. It was probably one of the reasons he'd called her.
"John's no one," he answered, aiming for a casual, dismissive tone.
"No one. Who's keeping you from drinking coffee?"
"Okay, so he's not no one, he's someone. Was someone. So what?"
"The guy you rode the train with?"
Score another point for womanly intuition.
"Maybe."
"He's the reason you called, isn't he?"
No. I called because Sam broke my heart again."
Jeannie laughed gently.
"How did she break your heart if you don't want her anymore?"
"I didn't say I did..."
"Oh. Huh."
Rodney sat up. "I did say that, didn't I?"
"So, no broken heart?"
Rodney sighed a very exasperated sigh. "I don't know. It feels broken to me." Rodney would never admit this, but it was nice to be able to mention things like feelings without worrying about his manly image. Sometimes sisters could be extremely useful.
Well, maybe this John person broke it."
Rodney sputtered. "Excuse me? Jeannie, John is a man."
"I'm no rocket scientist, but I had worked that out for myself, Mayor," she said,
and Rodney saw the eye roll all the way from Canada.
"I just meant maybe you miss him, that's all."
Rodney relaxed a little. "Oh, I guess I do, a little." His chest ached and he sighed. "A lot. I miss him a lot. Where the hell did he go, anyway? I thought he liked me." Jeannie sounded strained, possibly trying not to laugh. "Did he say anything to you before he stopped showing up?"
"No, he just yelled at me for talking about Dr. Carter too much and got off at the wrong stop and disappeared into fucking thin air."
Jeannie was silent for a moment.
"Oh, wow," she said. "Wow, Mayor."
"What?"
"Meredith, you can be so stupid sometimes."
"Yes, whatever, I'm an idiot. Can you please just tell me what I did to make my best friend hate me?"
"Oh, that's so sweet. I can't remember the last time you had a best friend. Did you hire him from an agency or something?"
"Could you just give me your wise, womanly advice now, and you can go back to insulting me later?" Rodney suggested. If Jeannie could explain the inexplicable John Shepherd, Rodney would buy her a pony.
Relax, he doesn't hate you. I bet if you ran into him again, you could patch things right up.
What, seriously?
Sure. It's just, you can be so self-involved, Mare.
Hey,
Rodney cut himself off. You might have a point.
You're not that used to having close friends. Sometimes you don't pay as much attention to other people, or their problems, or their feelings, as you should, she explained, putting a mysterious emphasis on feelings.
This guy, John, he probably just got a little sick of it, that's all. You just need to find him and tell him you're sorry.
Oh, that's brilliant, Jeannie, Rodney said sarcastically, even though her words filled him with hope. He could be anywhere in the entire city. Where do you suggest I start?
Oh, I don't know, she said breezily. Just follow your heart. Your poor, broken heart.
All right, now I remember why I never call you, Rodney snarled, hanging up. A minute later, he called her back to apologize and to ask how she was, because she was his sister and he loved her, and he was working on changing that bad habit he had of screwing things up with people he cared about. Intellectually, Rodney knew that exercise lowered stress. Theory, however, was often distinct from practice. Besides, the whole brain-clearing endorphin rush that he was going for was probably out of reach for a weekday Manhattan pedestrian who had hit every red light from Madison to First and had narrowly avoided being run over on his third and final attempt at jaywalking. Strangely enough, the fact that Rodney had absolutely nowhere to be just made the delays more irritating. He started looking around half-heartedly for a place to eat lunch, thinking wistfully of the bland cafeteria food in his comfortably anonymous corner of the second-floor faculty lounge. He didn't know how the university expected him to spend his vacation time relaxing if they were going to disrupt his meal patterns. For a radically adventurous scientist, Rodney was, in most other aspects, a creature of habit. He turned around halfway to York and started back again, thinking that his luck with the traffic lights would change with his direction. It didn't. He weaved between streets as he made his way back, lengthening the trip even as he mulled over the tedium of aimless walks, because why keep moving if you aren't aiming for anything? The thought was so humiliatingly maudlin that Rodney stopped short and banged his head against the Third Avenue bus stop shelter a couple of times.
"Excuse me, are you well?"
Clearly, whoever had asked that question was an idiot of the highest order and deserved to be viciously sacrificed on the altar of Rodney's misery. But when he lifted his head and turned around, the idiot turned out to be a really, really beautiful woman who, on top of being all dark and gorgeous and exotic-looking, seemed sort of genuinely concerned. Rodney bit back at least three eviscerating comments and smiled nervously.
"Fine, fine, I'm just thinking."
The woman raised an eyebrow in elegant disbelief. "Thinking very hard," Rodney clarified. "I'm a violent thinker."
"Clearly," said the woman, nodding diplomatically. "Of course, such habits must become very strenuous, physically as well as mentally. I am Taylor Amagin," she announced with another deep nod. "If you allow me, I could help you."
Rodney gaped. You what? He rubbed the sore spot on his head.
"I can help you to relax, heal yourself," she explained. "No charge for your first session."
"Oh my God, are you a hooker?"
"No, look, I know I look like the kind of guy who would pay for sex, but actually, I have a persistent romantic streak, and also I'm terrified of STDs, and..."
The woman was glaring at him with a tired, irritated expression in her pretty eyes. "I am only trying to promote the studio," she sighed, handing Rodney a flyer with more scorn than he felt was strictly necessary. "Yoga," she added when he continued to stare at her instead of reading the flyer. "It is a yoga studio. There is no sex involved."
"Oh."
He realized, somewhat belatedly, that in addition to holding a stack of flyers in her hand, Taylor was also standing next to a hand-lettered poster that clearly read, "Atlantis Yoga, First Lesson Free." The sign was taped up in a window next to an open door, in front of which Taylor had been hovering, a fact he might have noticed sooner had he not been trying to dislodge his own brain.
Sorry.
She smiled ironically. "Do not worry. It actually happens quite often." She narrowed her eyes. "I do not know why my employer keeps making me approach people in this manner. I suspect he finds it funny." "I'm not paying you to slander me in the presence of future customers," drawled a suspiciously familiar-sounding voice from just inside the studio. "And it's only happened 3 times. I told you, if you'd just given the flyer straight off and lay off that meditation serenity chakra talk, you wouldn't keep having this problem." The voice stopped short as the man it belonged to appeared in the doorway. Rodney breathed in sharply, because he absolutely did not gasp. Gasping was for girls in soap operas and romance novels. The other man's eyes widened in trepidation. He grinned sheepishly and ducked his head in a stupidly endearing way.
Hi, Rodney, said John Shepherd. Nice sweatpants.
Rodney narrowed his eyes. You know each other? Taylor glanced back and forth between them before looking at John intently. John? You have other friends?
I have friends, John said defensively. Rodney's a friend.
Yeah, we'll see, grumbled Rodney. John's face clouded and Rodney's heart twisted.
Yeah, he amended, I'm Shepherd's friend, for some unknown and deeply mysterious reason.
He held out a hand. Dr. McKay, astrophysicist. When introducing himself to beautiful women, Rodney reflexively brought out the big guns. She took his hand in a near-painful grip, which Rodney found both threatening and kind of hot.
Your friend, she said, looking at John, thought I was a prostitute.
Hey! Rodney dropped her hand and backed up a step. My brain is on serious overload here. You have to cut me some slack.
I think, she continued, he is a bit slow for an astrophysicist.
John looked him up and down and grinned.
You noticed that too?
Yeah, okay, as hilarious as my humiliation must be for you and your non-hooker employee, John snorted. Taylor's mouth twitched slightly. I have things to say to you, Rodney finished, pointing at John threateningly. Many, many things. So you are going to buy me coffee, and then you are going to listen.
Good, he thought. That was good. Decisive. Perhaps not the, hey, I'm a sensitive friend, so talk to me speech he'd rehearsed with Jeannie, but that stuff wasn't really his style.
Rodney, look, I... John sighed and did the adorable head-ducking thing again, which made Rodney want to claw his own eyes out.
I have to work right now. I've got a class to teach. Will you hang around until I'm done? There's a cafe across the street.
Oh, no, I'm not letting you weasel out of this. You'll probably escape out the back and disappear to Mexico.
I wasn't going to... I'll wait in the studio.
John and I have a strict policy against spectators during lessons, Taylor chimed in. It disrupts the focus.
Oh, for God's sake, fine, groaned Rodney, grabbing a flyer savagely out of Taylor's hand. I'll take your voodoo-glorified stretching class, and yoga head damn well better be as relaxing as everyone says, or my head is going to explode all over both of you.
So we win either way, John said brightly, pulling Rodney by his sleeve into the studio.
I am going... Rodney began, lying like a quivering heap of jelly on his yoga mat. I am going to kill.
Problem, McKay, said Rodney's new friend Ronan, whom Rodney was going to murder as soon as his limbs started working again. He should have known this would happen. As soon as John had said, hey, buddy, this is an intermediate class, so I'm going to have Ronan work with you separately. His eyes had sparkled, and his grin had been evil, and Rodney could have sworn he heard the stereotypical ominous clap of thunder foretelling the pain and humiliation in his future. Ronan Dex was a large, well-muscled, dreadlocked, terrifying man. When he grinned, Rodney honestly couldn't tell whether the man was being friendly or preparing to eat him alive. For a man his size, Ronan was hideously flexible. He had also been extremely zealous in his instructional duties. Arch your back more. I can't arch my back anymore. My spine will snap, and I'll die.
Okay, arch your back more, or I'll snap your spine.
Rodney really couldn't imagine what had drawn a guy like Ronan to something as new-agey as yoga in the first place. McKay, find your center, or I'll find it for you and rip it out. It seemed like he'd be more comfortable in another scene, like a seedy bar, or the military, or pro wrestling. So, Rodney had panted, trying to fold his legs into something approximating what Ronan had done with his. What brought you down the exciting career path of bogus spiritualism?
Flexible chicks.
Ah, that explained it then. Rodney was, in fact, not flexible, or all that focused. While holding one of his ankles and attempting to make it go up over his thigh like Ronan's, he'd made the mistake of glancing over at John, who was in the middle of a serpentine arching movement that ended in his arms flexed and extended, and his head tipped back, his throat displayed, his eyes closed, his mouth opened very slightly. Not much. Just enough for John's tongue to dart out unconsciously, moistening his lips. What the hell? The man exercised for a living. Didn't he know how to keep hydrated? Then Rodney had overbalanced and toppled sideways, and Ronan's helpful little grab at his arm had been hard enough to bruise. Half an hour later, he was incapable of even threatening Ronan properly, which, given the man's size and questionable morals, was probably for the best. Death! He tried anyway, pointing a shaking finger in the general direction of Ronan's looming, grinning form. Slow and horrible death. Your entire family.
Didn't have to do everything I did, McKay. You're not in very good shape.
You said do exactly as I do or I'll hurt you. Ronan smiled serenely. I did say that. Well, good to meet you.
He leaned down and patted Rodney heartily on the shoulder. Rodney winced and tried to hit back, but his arms still weren't moving very well.
Ronan? John's voice was suddenly directly overhead.
I told you not to break Dr. McKay.
He's not broken. He's resting.
Broken? Rodney put in feebly, throwing an arm over his eyes.
You know, Rodney, it was only your first lesson. You didn't have to do everything Ronan did.
Rodney removed his arm and glared as hard as he could. He made me, he said accusingly, tilting his head toward Ronan.
John raised his eyebrows.
Ronan shrugged. I liked watching him get annoyed and turn colors. He's funny.
I don't think I did any permanent damage.
Rodney sputtered.
John rolled his eyes and grinned.
Be that as it may, I think you should go get the heating pad.
He'll never toughen up if you coddle him, Ronan retorted as he turned and lumbered away.
You all right, Rodney? John asked gently.
Not in any sense of the word. And what the hell? Yoga? You told me you were a physics teacher.
This is a sort of physics. Elasticity. Surface tension. Objects at rest tend to stay at rest, John said airily, nudging Rodney gently in the calf.
Rodney groaned. Thank you, Shepard, thank you. I will no longer have chronic nightmares about dying without a Nobel. Now every night I'm going to wake up screaming from dreams of yoga yetis with probable criminal records forcing me into the plow pose.
I saw your plow pose, John said, nudging him again. Not bad.
Oh, shut up. I thought I'd never get out of it. I'd have to spend the rest of my life bent in half.
John laughed and dropped gracefully into a crouch by Rodney's mat, smiling at him so sweetly that Rodney was a little freaked out.
What? What are you grinning at? Are my ligaments pulsing right out of my skin? Because that's what it feels like to me.
I missed you, Rodney, John said simply, lowering his eyes.
Rodney's chest tightened. His heart swelled. He almost laughed out loud with the joy of it. John had missed him. Then he remembered riding the train alone for a week, and the joy morphed into fury. You missed me? Are you serious?
Rodney hauled himself into a sitting position and pushed John, hard, in the middle of his chest, watching with satisfaction as graceful, cat-like, beautiful John Shepard fell backwards and landed very ungracefully on his skinny ass.
You missed me! Where the hell were you? I haven't seen you in almost a month!
John was still sprawled on the floor where he'd fallen, holding himself up on one elbow and looking up at Rodney with wide, guilty eyes.
No, you know what? I don't even want to hear it, because I was going to apologize to you. My stupid sister had convinced me this was all my fault.
You talked to Jeannie about me? John asked with a tiny smile. How is she?
You can't trick me into changing the subject. I'm smarter than you.
That's debatable.
Would you be serious for once? Jesus!
Rodney was breathing faster for no real reason. He'd had a sudden sense memory of the first time they'd met, of panic melting into blue skies, of John's arms and John's warmth and John's voice. His eyes stung and he blinked rapidly.
You just left. I thought we were...
Rodney. John rolled onto his knees and leaned forward.
You are.
We are.
You were my best friend,
Rodney admitted, voice breaking in a really humiliating way.
You got me all... I got used to you being around, and then you just...
You're my best friend, too, Rodney, John said sincerely, putting a hand carefully on Rodney's arm.
Rodney, who had never heard that sentence before in his life, gaped at him like a goldfish.
I'm sorry, all right? John continued, agitated, brushing sweat-dampened bangs off his forehead. I was dealing with something, personal, and I thought I could deal with it better on my own.
I was wrong, he quickly added when he saw Rodney gearing up for a rant.
Can't we go back to the way it was, you know, before I was a jerk?
Rodney averted his eyes and swallowed hard. Yes, well, it wasn't entirely... I never actually asked what was going on with you, so maybe, possibly in the future, I could be more sensitive to you and your feelings and...
John was biting his lip, looking suspiciously near laughter.
What?
We're not women, McKay, he pointed out.
Oh, please, Rodney snapped, stung. I'm not the one wearing cropped pants.
These are yoga pants, John insisted, plucking at them.
Plus, you're the one who threw a fit because I wasn't paying enough attention to you.
I'm trying here. Make up your mind.
John blushed, like a total girl.
That's not exactly... He sighed. You don't have to change, Rodney, he said, suddenly completely serious. That's not what I...
You shouldn't change, he coughed. But thank you, you know, for trying.
Yeah. Rodney agreed, staring at the ground. He played with the corner of his mat and stared at John's bare ankle.
We're not very good at this, Rodney realized aloud.
Speak for yourself. I'm good at everything, John said with a grin.
Rodney rolled his eyes. John stuck out his tongue, and Rodney could tell they were friends again, by the way the world tipped back onto its axis and resumed spinning.
Heating pad, Ronan interjected gruffly. He threw the pad down to Rodney and took a bite out of a huge sandwich he'd somehow acquired. And you're both acting like girls.
John laughed. Rodney fell back on the mat and groaned. Ronan chewed his sandwich.
On the way out, John told Taylor she didn't have to hand out flyers anymore. She was so relieved she looked like she was going to hug him, but ended up just squeezing his shoulder and grinning, and Rodney apologized again. She shook his hand more gently this time, and even smiled at him with very little irony, so he figured they were okay.
So, he said to John on the way to the cafe, Taylor, not a hooker, but do you think she would go out with me?
John laughed derisively. I wouldn't try it.
Hey! I know she's insanely hot, but she seemed to like me well enough, and I'm okay to look at, and...
Whoa, Rodney, I just meant that Ronan would probably tear your arms off if you touched her. Otherwise, I'd say sure.
Oh. Rodney's indignation fizzled.
Really? You don't think she's out of my league?
No way, John said, and it was the kind of thing a best friend was supposed to say, but it still sounded honest.
Anyway, he added, locking eyes with Rodney, I don't think she's exactly the right one for you.
Huh, said Rodney. Unbelievably flattered that John thought he had actual standards. Well, I'll never know, I guess. God, I'm always chasing the wrong people.
Yeah, know how that goes, John sighed.
Rodney looked at him, stopping suddenly in his tracks.
Huh, he said again.
John stopped a few paces ahead, looking back at him warily.
What?
It's just, I just realized I've never seen you in the sun before, Rodney explained thoughtfully.
Oh, said John. Well...
He did a slow turn and leaned rakishly, one hand on his hip.
What do you think?
Oh, shut up, mumbled Rodney, who mostly thought, guh.
We all know you're gorgeous. Quit posing already.
John bit his lip and grinned.
Rodney didn't ask about Taylor again.
He didn't much think about her either.
All right, you knuckle-draggers, listen up. It was not the wisest way to address his engineering students on his first day back from mandatory leave, but Rodney had to stick to what he knew. Besides, he was pretty sure most of them knew by now that the derogatory name-calling was just his way of showing affection. You all have a final project due at the end of this week, and a test in 2 days, an extremely difficult test, which I have warned you will include painful essay portions and near-impossible practical equations. Yet you have all refrained from asking for a study guide, and why is that? You, Cadman, why is that?
Because of you, said Laura Cadman, an intimidating freshman with an unhealthy interest in explosives. Your syllabus says in gigantic bold letters that study guides are for weak minds and literature students.
Does it? Well, what do you say we all take a step backward in our intellectual development for the sake of all of your grades, which are seriously starting to depress me?
The silence in the room was palpable. Ford raised his hand, very slowly.
Dr. McKay? He asked cautiously.
Yes, sorry, I'll be very clear, so that even you clowns can understand me. Study guides, for your exam, here.
He pulled a huge packet out of his briefcase and waved it at his students before setting it on the podium. Now, my lectures this semester have been on the dense side, so nothing really remains but to review the material. I will be holding a mandatory review session on Wednesday.
Professor, the test is Wednesday, Ford pointed out confusedly.
Don't be stupid, the test is next Monday, Rodney said brusquely.
But you just said... Do you want to study for the test and complete your project during the same week? Because that's completely ridiculous, Ford, but you're more than welcome to try it.
By the way, I don't particularly feel like immersing myself in mediocrity this week or the next, so you might as well turn your projects in on the 21st instead of the 7th. Half of the class was looking a little freaked out. The other half, the half including Ford and Laura and the other students who weren't a total waste of Rodney's time, was wearing huge disbelieving grins. Now take a study guide, single file line, act like civilized humans. Everyone take one and study the hell out of it, and I'll see you on Wednesday.
The grins got bigger. Rodney kept scowling at all of them, but it was a challenge.
And for God's sake, if any of you still fail my class after this, I am going to hurl myself off the roof of this building, and my ghost will haunt you relentlessly all the way through summer school. Now get out!
You rock, Dr. McKay, Ford called out, and Rodney just barely managed to hide his smile behind a stack of study guides.
Let's not go to work today.
Rodney blinked. I'm sorry?
Let's not go to work today, John repeated, slowly and clearly. We can't not go to work. It's Thursday. What kind of person takes a day off on Thursday? It makes no sense, Shepard.
I didn't say we should take today off, said John, grasping the bar overhead with both hands and letting his body sway nonchalantly with the motion of the train. I said we should not go. There's a difference. He bounced a couple of times on the balls of his feet, vibrant with suppressed enthusiasm. Did you happen to notice that it's the most perfect day ever outside, right this minute? 75, low humidity, light breeze, little swirly clouds. Do you really want to miss out while you sit at your desk grading papers? Jesus, John, Rodney sighed, knowing full well that John had referred to cirrus clouds as little swirly ones purely to annoy him. We're nearly 40. We are responsible adults. Well, I am, at least, and we cannot just cut class. Are you 12?
John let go of the bar with one of his hands and swung around a smooth arc, bumping Rodney's chest with his own.
Chicken, he whispered with a wicked grin, waggling his eyebrows ridiculously 3 inches from Rodney's face.
Oh, please, Rodney retorted leanly, his throat closing up a little as his heart sped up. It was always exhausting being with someone who was simultaneously the most alluring person in the world and also the most appallingly moronic.
Chicken, he said again, louder, punctuating the two drawn-out syllables with sharp pokes at Rodney's shoulder.
Ow, Rodney protested. Quit it.
John started to cluck, a full-out, playground chicken clucking that Rodney had never heard from anyone over 4 feet tall.
All right, that's it, Rodney groaned dramatically, lunging forward and clapping his hand over John's mouth. There will be other perfect days, Shepard. Perfect days on weekends, during which you can frolic through the meadow or whatever it is you were planning on doing without getting me in more trouble at work.
Said John from under Rodney's hand. His lips caught and dragged softly against Rodney's palm. Rodney shivered and let go. Come again?
I said I want this one, he repeated insistently, looking straight into Rodney's eyes.
His hand still gripped Rodney's wrist, gently. His thumb stroked once, twice, against the inside of Rodney's wrist. Something shattered in Rodney's brain and reassembled itself, clearer than before, and he had the sudden, strange, elating impression that what John actually wanted was a perfect day for the two of them. The train pulled into a station. Rodney caught sight of the station number over John's shoulder and grinned as inspiration struck.
"We're getting off here," he announced, pulling out of John's grasp, only to grip his wrist instead and haul him off the train.
"Rodney, what?"
"Just trust me," he said imperiously, dragging John through the terminal with a single-minded intensity. He was through missing out on perfect days.
Rodney made John close his eyes as soon as they boarded the queue.
"This is stupid," John announced as he swayed sightlessly and clutched the bar for dear life.
"Quid pro quo," Rodney said in a sing-song voice, thoroughly enjoying the fact that the loss of eyesight seemed to rob Shepard of his ethereal balance. Now he was tripping and flailing all over the place, like a normal person on a moving vehicle.
"Bastard," said John, smiling.
The train lurched and Rodney caught John for once, closing big hands over John's arms and holding him steady. He didn't let go until they got to their stop 40 minutes later, because nothing would ruin this day more thoroughly than John's brains being splattered on a subway floor.
"Okay, can I open them now?" John asked, bouncing slightly.
"Not yet. Not yet."
Rodney led him carefully up the stairs, courageously allowing himself to rest one of his hands over the small of John's back.
"And, okay, now."
John opened his eyes and blinked.
"Looks like we're in Brooklyn?"
He turned to Rodney and raised an eyebrow.
"Why are we in Brooklyn?"
"Because, you idiot, I hear there's a pretty good Ferris wheel around here somewhere," Rodney answered with mostly feigned exasperation. He broke into a huge, foolish grin as he watched comprehension dawn on John, his whole face lighting up from the inside.
"Cool," said John reverently, mirroring Rodney's dopey grin with one of his own.
Then he snapped out of it abruptly, clapped Rodney on the back, and jogged toward the boardwalk.
"Ski ball first," he called over his shoulder. "I'll bet you a corn dog I can kick your ass."
"Never bet with a physicist when projectiles are involved," Rodney yelled back, jogging laboriously after him. Later, after Rodney insisted on calling the school to claim illness, an action John reacted to by clucking like a chicken again until Rodney smacked him in the arm, and they were strolling down the boardwalk in the gentle May sunlight. Rodney was surprised to learn that John hadn't been to Coney Island in almost 20 years.
"But this was my favorite place in the world when I was younger," John said, positively glowing as he ate his corn dog.
"Younger and much less mature,"
Rodney deadpanned, eyeing the fluffy purple elephant that John had won after he creamed Rodney at skee-ball, which John was currently cradling in one arm. "Oh, this? I won this for you." He stuffed the toy into Rodney's arms and winked. "Consolation prize." Rodney rolled his eyes, but he held on to the stupid thing anyway. He was thinking of naming it Newton and keeping it on his desk. They hadn't come prepared for swimming, but John wanted to hit the beach anyway. He stripped off his t-shirt and spread it out over the sand, flopping onto it with a contented sigh. "You're going to end up looking like a lobster that has melanoma," Rodney warned, staring inappropriately at John's chest, his mouth gone dry. "I don't burn easily," John answered drowsily, his eyes closed and his mouth turned up at the corners. "Sit down. Breathe. Relax. Feel the sun, Professor McKay." "I'm in a suit," Rodney pointed out. "Plus, I can't sit down and relax until you're protected from skin cancer," he added stubbornly, producing a small bottle from his briefcase. John opened his eyes and laughed. "Wow! You carry sunscreen with you? All the time?" "I have very fair and sensitive skin." He dropped the bottle on John's chest. "Put it on, or I'll never be able to relax." "Yes, Mom." While John was busy with the sunscreen, Rodney tugged off his tie, undid the buttons on his collar, and took off the very nice and very expensive jacket so that he could spread it out on the sand next to John. "Happy?" he huffed, lowering himself carefully onto his back and glancing at the man next to him. John reached over and smeared a bit of sunscreen across Rodney's cheek. "Yeah," he said. Later, after renting a locker for Rodney's briefcase, his sand-covered jacket, and Newton the elephant, they wandered around, rediscovering the amusement park. Parts of their clothing were still damp from when they had rolled up their pants to wade into the ocean, and John had gotten them into a splash fight with four belligerent 9-year-olds. "I still say we won, technically," John was saying. "Oh, definitely. That kid pulled that water gun out of thin air. It was a clear violation of the unspoken rules of engagement. No weapons unless agreed upon beforehand. And spraying us in the eyes was a total cheap shot." "Ooh, bumper cars," said John. John picked the red car, and Rodney picked the number 7. He was rear-ended quite a lot by a raucously laughing John, but near the end he got in one good broadside hit to John's car. He suspected, from the indulgent look on his face, that John had let him do it. From there it was the spinning gravity ride that had Rodney both grinning and struggling not to be sick. "I can tell you how much force we're exerting on the wall right now, Rodney," yelled John as he lifted his feet gingerly off the floor. The flying swings, and every roller coaster they could find. And when Rodney found himself uttering a breathless, "Let's go again," after their second cyclone ride, he blamed John's influence. They even took a turn on the carousel, a nostalgically old-fashioned contraption with tinkling music and a diverse herd of four-legged mounts. "I'm not even going to make fun of you for picking that one," Rodney declared, shaking his head. "It's just too easy." "What?" John scrunched his eyebrows at Rodney from atop his white, curly-tailed unicorn. "I like the ones that go up and down." They circled the park for hours, until the sun began to set, and Rodney had that wrung-out, exhausted feeling that one tends to get at the end of the best day ever. Soon they found themselves drawing toward the gigantic Ferris wheel, which, for some reason, they had yet to ride. "Hey," Rodney said suddenly, nudging John by sort of leaning into him, pressing his whole side with his own. "Were you planning on hitting the wheel or not? We can't come here every Thursday, you know. I suspect the novelty would wear off." "Mmm," said John, nudging back. He checked his watch. "I was just waiting for the right time." "Yep. Check it out." He pointed. The sky behind the wheel was gray-violet, nearly dark. As if on cue, the wheel lit up, from the center out, bursting into vast, twinkling stripes of red and yellow. Rodney whipped back around to face John. "How the hell did you manage that?" He grinned. "They always turn the lights on at the same time. My mom used to pretend she could light it up at will. I thought she had magical powers until I was 11. "Huh, I never believed in magic when I was little. A magician came to my 6th birthday party, and I berated him until he admitted that the bouquet came from up his sleeve." He frowned. "He didn't do any parties in my town after that." John snorted. "Seriously, only you, Rodney," he chuckled, shaking his head and smiling in a way that made Rodney's knees feel rubbery. "Come on, the line's not so long. I bet we can make it on for the next go-round." "Oh, God," said Rodney faintly, not for the first time. "I'm telling you, we're perfectly safe." "Oh, God!" He clutched the safety bar desperately, his eyes shut tight. "High! Up!"
Nothing's going to happen to you, Rodney. It's okay.
How can you like these things? People die on these things, you know.
Not very many people, John said soothingly. Rodney opened his eyes and glared at him.
John was watching him, one arm looped over the seat behind them and the other draped loosely over the safety bar.
Hi, he said softly, smiling. We're still alive.
Well, probably not for long, grumbled Rodney mutinously, relaxing a fraction until the wheel gave a mighty lurch and stopped short. The car swung violently, forward and back, and an embarrassing sound escaped Rodney's throat as he shut his eyes again.
Hey, said John quietly, stop that. You're going to be fine.
Why does it keep doing that?
To let people on and off, John explained. It's actually a great system. It means the ride is twice as long, and sometimes when it stops...
He shook Rodney's shoulder with the hand he had been resting on the back of the seats.
Seriously, open your eyes. You'll like it.
Rodney did open his eyes, if only because he could never yell at people properly without staring them down. Quit invalidating my phobias, Shepard. I'll have you know...
He trailed off, eyes wide. Oh, wow.
They had been stopped precisely at the top, and the angle of their position created the illusion, for a moment, that they weren't just part of a wheel making limited, grounded up-and-down cycles, but hovering on their own, high above the ground and the hazy bright lights of Coney Island and the glittering outline of the city over the water.
Kind of like flying, isn't it? John said breathlessly, turning his face away from Rodney's for a moment into the breeze that gently buffeted the front of their car.
Rodney was a mile high on a creaky metal death trap, but now John was looking back at him and giving him that smile, his hair a mess and his cheeks ruddy from the wind, and Rodney felt it too, the part where it was kind of like flying. The wheel lurched again as it started to move, but this time Rodney's reaction was less like terror and more like disappointment. John didn't look away. Neither did Rodney.
So, John began a little awkwardly, what do you think so far?
It's nice, Rodney allowed, his voice dripping with feigned condescension. I like the part where we didn't disconnect from the wheel and plunge to our deaths. That was lovely.
John laughed. I aim to please.
Well, to be honest, Rodney said, shifting around and rubbing at his shoulder with one hand, these seats are brutal on my back, and my muscles are still all sore from when you rammed me from behind.
John's eyes shot wide, and then he looked like he might be having a stroke, trying to keep from laughing.
Rodney flushed brilliantly. In the bumper cars, he clarified, unnecessarily. From when you rammed me with your bumper car, from behind. He sighed grumpily. You absolute child!
Aw, you know you love me, Rodney, John teased, hugging him close, one-armed, and letting him go again, gaze wandering dreamily over the ground stretched under them.
The weird thing was, Rodney did know that. Had known for a while. And he wasn't quite sure if it was altitude sickness or the way the Ferris wheel lights were outlining John's silhouette, or possibly a combination of the two. But suddenly, he was feeling pretty okay with knowing. He was overcome with scientific euphoria, the sort of hot, fierce rush that always came over him when he figured out how to make an equation work, how to complete a proof, how to make two components fit together and work together and become something better. Naturally, this was the sort of discovery that needed to be made public, immediately.
John! Rodney said importantly, nudging him with an elbow.
Hey, John!
Hmm?
John murmured lazily, turning toward him, and it was like he was turning into the sun. And wow, Rodney had been stupid! I just figured out... Rodney's heart raced, the thrill of discovery mingling with the crippling fear of acting on it. The thing is, I need to... He trailed off, frustrated. You know the thing where we're both incapable of expressing emotions properly?
John raised his eyebrows.
Uh-huh, he said slowly. Well, I... He sighed heavily and fixed John with a determined gaze. Okay. Then Rodney leaned forward, so abruptly that the car rocked, and kissed John with all the fervor and enthusiasm he usually put into fantastic new discoveries. Maybe a bit more, because this was John, after all, and John was probably the most fantastic thing ever discovered by anyone. He had been pretty sure, almost positive. The Imperial evidence was staggering. But still, there was a moment, while John was frozen and unresponsive, when Rodney felt cold, sharp panic rising in his chest, and maybe he'd read this whole thing wrong, and it was all in his head. And then John made a quiet sound deep in his throat, and melted, cradling Rodney's face in his hands with a gentleness that was completely at odds with the ferocity of his mouth,
which was hungry and devouring and everywhere at once. Rodney happily lost all control of the situation, helplessly clutching handfuls of worn soft t-shirt as John licked into his mouth, traced his bottom lip with the tip of his tongue, hauled Rodney as close as he could get him, so when they broke for air, they were wrapped around each other.
"Jesus," said John, roughly, his breathing labored.
He nuzzled the spot where Rodney's neck met his shoulder and rested there, his hair tickling Rodney's chin.
"So, how long have you wanted to do that?"
"Pretty much since the day we met," Rodney said truthfully, sliding a hand into John's ridiculous hair and kissing his temple. John groaned into his neck.
"You're kidding me, right? You better be kidding me, because otherwise I'm going to kill you."
He was shaking a little. Rodney smiled and tightened his hold.
"Yeah, well, I have poor social skills," he explained reasonably, stroking his thumb underneath John's shirt at the waist.
John half chuckled, half exhaled, and attacked, licking and nibbling at Rodney's neck in a way that was probably supposed to be vindictive.
"You complete and utter bastard," he growled between kisses.
But Rodney wasn't really listening at that point. After 20 minutes, the operator made them get off the ride. But Rodney was 100 feet in the air the whole ride home, leaning against John, and they didn't really need a Ferris wheel to fly, anyway. Rodney was sure he'd never felt so good at 6:30 on a weekday morning. "I'm hungry," he told John happily as he sat up and stretched. He looked over at his best friend, who was standing sleep-flushed and tousled and shirtless beside the bed, buttoning his pants. "And horny," Rodney added, tugging on John's belt loops. "Really, really horny." John laughed and let Rodney reel him in for a sleepy kiss. "I'll buy you breakfast, but we need to head to the station pretty soon. We're going to be late." He tried to reach for his shirt, which was crumpled on the floor under Rodney's desk chair, but Rodney tightened his grip and pulled him down onto the bed. "You're not going to just pick up some other guy off the subway now that you've had your way with me, are you?" Rodney was mostly kidding, but he figured it couldn't hurt to check.
"Nah," John yawned. "After you, I feel like I can't trust my gaydar at all anymore."
"Well, I was a little bit gay," Rodney said consolingly. "If anything, your gaydar is too finely calibrated."
"Better than yours, anyway. I probably could have sat on your lap in a pink tie-dyed tank top that had boy crazy written on it in glitter, and you wouldn't have noticed that I had a thing for you."
"Hey, that is completely..."
"Well, yeah, that's fair," Rodney admitted grudgingly. His eyes narrowed. "Wait, you don't actually own a shirt like that, do you?"
"Very funny," said John, rolling his eyes. And that totally wasn't a no, but Rodney chose to leave it alone for now.
"You know," he said thoughtfully, "you could be the gaydar for both of us now. You know, like, the next time we're on the 6 train and there's a hot guy cruising me, you could point him out."
"Like hell," John said.
"Oh, don't worry. I wouldn't actually sleep with him, unless he's hotter than you."
John's eyes darkened.
"Seriously, though, whole new horizons are opening up for me," Rodney continued, because he really dug the way John's face was going all intense and possessive. "My days of sexual dissatisfaction are at an end."
Yeah, agreed John, raising his hand pointedly.
"Now that you've opened my eyes to the gay public transit scene," Rodney continued blithely, "there's no end to the action I could get. Okay, here's the plan. Tomorrow you can help me pick up tricks on the crosstown buses, and then we'll hit the ferries."
John growled and pounced, tackling Rodney back against the pillows and pinning his wrists by his head.
"Airplanes," suggested Rodney gleefully. "Monorails, ocean liners, possibly a rickshaw or two, and maybe..."
John kissed him fiercely, laughing against his mouth, and Rodney triumphantly set to work re-unbuttoning John's pants. Some time later, Rodney managed to call NYU to let them know that his illness was showing no signs of clearing up. They'd better give him a couple more days. Being indispensable had its perks, here and there. The end.
This is a Manhattan-bound 6 local train.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.